figure it out. We'll figure it out. That song brings back memories. I've seen that song in a long time, Standing on the Promises. Reminds me of my bygone days at the Defiance Church of Christ. I wanted to share a story with you that some of you will probably not appreciate, but hopefully we'll can move past it fairly quickly. But it's a story that goes back to when I was growing up in the church that I grew up at, Defiance Church of Christ. Had about seven pews on each side. 40, 50 people would gather for worship every Sunday. And back then, like a lot of you, we had services on Sunday mornings and we had services on Sunday nights. And a lot of times the Sunday night service were like the JV services where everybody kind of did their best, but it was never, you know, quite the caliber. The sermon was a JV sermon, singing was kind of JV. Since we were so small, I didn't have a lot of peers my age. But one of the guys was a couple years older than me. His name was Paul. He was one of our song leaders. He was about 17 years old. I was probably about 14, 13. And every once in a while, we would hang out on Sundays, and a lot of times we would hang out between the services. You know, get together on Sundays, and he could drive, and so we would hang out and then come back to the services on Sunday night. And a lot of times, he would lead the services on Sunday night. Now, Paul was about 6'6" tall, huge guy. Just imagine in a really small auditorium, I mean, just this imposing figure. And he would stand up, and he had this beautiful, amazing voice. And he would lead us in singing. One particular Sunday, we had been hanging out together, and we had hung up right up until the time it was time for our Sunday evening service. And he was busy picking the songs out together, and we were goofing around and doing whatever we did when we were teenagers, having fun. And if memory serves me correctly, this was not the usual thing, but we were sitting in the front row. I don't know why. Probably because he was leading singing and we went right up at the last minute picking out songs. And he gets up and he gets up and lead singing. His dad was actually our preacher, so he would get up and preach. He came after leading singing and sat back down next to me, and we're goofing around and whatever teenagers did, feigning attention to the sermon, even less than we usually did. And those of you who grew up in these type of services, I think, can relate to this. There was always a moment when everybody just kind of knew the preacher was wrapping up. Like, there was no magical word, but all of a sudden people would start shifting their books and their songs and paper. Like, everybody, like, it was just kind of this song, and everybody was reaching into the pew to get their books. And it was about then that Paul leaned over and tried to think of an appropriate way to say this. But nature was kind of calling, and he broke wind just a little bit. And it was on a wooden pew, and so I think he meant for it to be kind of innocuous and quiet and not a big deal. But it was super loud, and it just felt at the moment like the walls were shaking and everyone was looking. And it was at that moment that he had to get up and lead singing. And so he and I are looking at each other, and we did what every teenage guy does. We immediately go down and try to keep our, so we're shaking and trying to hold the laughter in, and he's got to get up in front of the church and start leading this. And I don't know how he did it. He gets about two notes out, and I don't even stand up. I'm just leaning over the front, dying laughing. And it's one of those moments where the more that you're not supposed to laugh, the harder it is to make yourself stop. And he's up there in his 6'6" frame carrying on, and I'm up here shaking in front. And we did the worst thing. We made eye contact for a minute. And then he's up there with this huge grin, breaking up in the middle of the song, laughing. And we just got the giggles. And we've all been there, right? It's like when you're laughing at the most inappropriate time about the most inappropriate thing. And I don't care how mean you are as a parent, you can't make your kid stop. Because once it's broken, then it's broken. And you can't, Mike Schreiber's giggling because he's been there many times. It's just so hard to get a hold of it. And it's like the more that you try to make it stop, the worse that it is, the worse noises come out as you're trying to suppress your laughter. And somehow Paul got through the service, and we just go to the back and just die laughing. And there wasn't even anything funny at that point. What was funny was, it wasn't supposed to be funny, but that made it funny. You know how that is. It just continued to kind of go on. But I think it's a story we can all relate to, because we've all had those moments where, for whatever reason, let's get the giggles. And usually it's with somebody else. And you're trying to not make them laugh. And we've probably all been there. Bill Kincaid's trying to pretend like he's never been there, but even Bill's got the giggles a couple times. And it's awful because you know that you can't make eye contact with a person because you're immediately going to laugh more. But you want nothing else more than to make eye contact with them because it's fun to laugh, isn't it? Like, we love to laugh. It's a great time. But laughter is like this double-edged sword because there are times when laughter is, that we say it's the best medicine. There are other times when it is highly inappropriate. I've come to believe that laughter should be a definitive expression when the church gathers. Like, there just shouldn't be a time when we get together and we don't laugh. And it doesn't mean that life is all laughter and fun and giggles, that there are difficulties. But as Christians, we have so much to be hopeful for. Our faith is in something that cannot be shaken. And so our joy is abounding. Laughter is the best medicine. It makes us feel better. It helps us cure our sadness and overcome our difficulties. In any list of desirable traits that a person has for a possible spouse one day, a sense of humor is almost always on the list. We want someone that we can laugh together with. But laughter can be tricky. Some things some people find funny, like the story I began the service with this morning. Other people don't find very funny. Maybe even when it's, they may even find it offensive. And so humor and laughter is this thing that we walk this fine line sometimes. Comedians, what a horrible job comedians must have. Trying to appease to people who are going to laugh at some jokes while other people are deeply offended at the same joke. Hey, welcome to preaching in a lot of ways, I would suppose. John 11:35 rather famously says, Jesus wept. One of the most famous verses of the Bible, mainly because it's two words and we can all learn that. So if we learn nothing else today, we can learn that Bible verse. John 11:35, Jesus wept. It's at the moments when it's at the moment when Lazarus is brought back to life, or just before that, and Jesus kind of enters into their sadness. And this verse is often quoted as an illustration of Jesus' full humanity. Jesus was fully human in that he wept. You know what I always wonder? I wonder if Jesus laughed. Of course he did, right? It is interesting that we don't have that Bible verse that later on in John, the Bible says Jesus laughed. It doesn't say that. But there are plenty of instances where it seems as though Jesus has a pretty funny personality. A lot of the parables he tells are hilarious. Hey, did you hear about the guy who was trying to get a speck out of his neighbor's eye when he's got this big pole sticking out of his other eye? That's supposed to be funny. When Jesus comes along and he tells the fishermen, hey guys, why don't you fish over there? Like, it's kind of a joke, isn't it? Like, Jesus comes along to tell the fishermen where to fish. Many of his parables are funny. But we don't often think about Jesus is a funny guy. Chris Cole, I included this just for you this morning. Jesus might have appreciated this limerick. In the OT, our God the Most High, in his folk put timor domini, which is just Latin for the fear of the Lord. But in Jesus, his son, he earthed wordplay and pun. Like a mushroom, he was a fun guy. Chris is there. I just want to give him time to let that ruminate. A fungi. Laughter may be the best medicine, but we're also going to find out this morning that like Paul Embert and I had that experience on Sunday night during church, it can also get us into trouble. This morning our text comes from Genesis chapter 18, and it involves probably the most famous scene of laughter in the Bible as we continue on our study of prominent women with the wife of Abraham, named Sarah. Sarah, of course, is maybe best known for laughing. And I immediately thought of that story this week, probably because I'm dysfunctional and have problems. But I thought of that story because it was one of the most prominent stories when I was laughing. The moment I was laughing, I knew that I shouldn't be laughing. And I thought, that is exactly what Sarah is confronted with. Genesis chapter 18. The Lord appeared again to Abraham near the oak grove belonging to Mamre. One day, Abraham was sitting at the entrance of his tent during the hottest part of the day. He looked up and noticed three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he ran to meet them, and he welcomed them, bowing low to the ground. "My lord," he said, "if it pleases you, stop here a while. Rest in the shade of this tree while water is brought to wash your feet. And since you've honored your servant with this visit, let me prepare some food to refresh you before your journey continues." "All right," they said, "do as you had said." Verse 6, "So Abraham ran to the tent and said to Sarah, 'Hurry, get three measures of your best flour, knead it into dough, bake some bread.' And then Abraham ran out to the herd and chose a tender calf and gave it to his servant, who quickly prepared it. When the food was ready, Abraham took some yogurt and milk and the roasted meat, and he served it to the men. As they ate, Abraham waited on them in the shade of the tree. 'Where is Sarah, your wife?' the visitors asked. 'Well, she's inside the tent,' Abraham replied. And then one of them said, 'I will return to you about this time next year, and your wife Sarah is going to have a son.'" Now Sarah was listening to this conversation from the tent. Abraham and Sarah were both very old by this time, and Sarah was long past the age of having children. So she laughed silently to herself and said, "How could a worn-out woman like me enjoy such pleasure, especially when my master, my husband, is also so old?" Then the Lord said to Abraham, "Why did Sarah laugh? Why did she say, 'Can an old woman like me have a baby?' Is nothing too hard for the Lord? I will return about this time next year, and she will have a son." And then Sarah was afraid, and so she denied it and said, "I didn't laugh." But the Lord said, "No, you did laugh." And that's where the story ends. You continue reading, obviously, but that story ends with that kind of ambiguous ending. Sarah said, "I didn't laugh." And the Lord said, "Yes, you did." The end. Now, wait a second. We have all these questions. What are we to do with this? And I think we can all put ourselves in Sarah's position, because we can all understand what it's like to laugh, and immediately when the laugh is out of our bodies, go, "Oh no, I shouldn't have done that." Because laughter it's just a reaction. If I'm begging you and pleading you to laugh this morning, it's not authentic, is it? Like, you laugh at a joke when it's funny, when it strikes you as funny. When a moment or something strikes you as funny, that's when you laugh. Sarah found this to be funny. She was already at terms with the fact that they were never going to have children. That ship had sailed. They were done. They were at peace with that, even though God had promised Abraham years and years ago that they would have children. That he brought them out to the clear blue sky or dark sky at night and said, "Look at all those stars. That's how many kids you're going to have. That's how many descendants you're going to have. Look at the sand on the shore. That's how many descendants you're going to have." But then days passed, and weeks passed, and months passed. And they tried the thing with Hagar. We'll talk about that next week. That wasn't the way God wanted it to be. Decades passed. They were getting wrinkly. They were getting gray-headed. She went through menopause. Okay, it's over. It wasn't meant to be. They don't have the answer, but they know that they're not going to have kids. And then one day, some dudes show up at their house and say, "Yeah, you're going to have kids next year." And Sarah's reaction is to laugh. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. And the whole story revolves around that question. Is anything too hard for the Lord? In a lot of ways, that's the whole question that the entire story of the Bible revolves around. It's told over and over and over again. David is going out, and Goliath, this foreign champion, is mocking the people of God, and David pretty much asks, is this too hard for God? Is that what you're saying? When Gideon gets his army reduced to 300 people and everybody's looking like there's no way we can do this, Gideon says, "Is this too hard for God? Too much?" When the disciples are walking on the road to Emmaus and Jesus comes upon them, Jesus basically asks them, "Oh, it looks bleak, it looks difficult. You think this is too hard? You think this is too much for God?" And it just seems to me that preaches, doesn't it? Like I don't have to say a lot more than that. Because all of us understand what that's like, to have the weight of unfulfilled promises, of failed expectations, weighing us down, and our faith begins to cripple, our doubt begins to rise. And at some point, somebody's got to come to us and ask us, you think this is too hard for God? Is that what this is about? Is this too much? I mean, no one's going to blame Abraham or Sarah for their doubt. Nobody looks at that situation and goes, what are you doing, morons? Of course you're about to have a child. If you look at some of the elderly members of their community and say, that's not how this works. They're past their prime. They're not able to do it. And these messengers from God come to them and say, I think this is too much for God. God made a promise. I think it's gotten away from him. It was more difficult than he thought. Sarah looks at a situation that looks impossible, and she laughs. The question that we're after this morning is God faithful? I mean, is God faithful to his promises? It seems to me that that's the centerpiece of our faith. The question that we ask over and over again as individuals, in our own lives, and the stuff that we're all going through individually, and collectively as a church, collectively as a universal church, we're constantly asking that question. Is God faithful to his promises? Is he going to do what he said he's done? Val's message over communion falls right into this. People all the time talking about how terrible things are, how awful it is. And it may weigh on our shoulders. We may look around and say, yep, I don't know where God is. This is getting a little too difficult. And it's almost as though we need the same visit that Sarah had. That asks us the same question. I think this is too much for God. Maybe it's too much for you. It probably is too much for you. It's probably too much for me, but it's not too much for God. And that's kind of the heart of what Scripture is about. It's about acknowledging that it is too big for us. It is too difficult for us. Are we going to be able to trust the Lord? It's kind of this ironic twist to the story. So Sarah laughs. It's absurd. Laughs at kind of this exaggeration. You're going to have a kid. And even calls it the calendar. Within a year, you're going to have a kid. And she laughs at the absurdity of it. But then later on in Genesis 21, when the child actually does come to fruition, there's this great irony of the story. Genesis 21 says, the Lord kept his word and did for Sarah exactly what he had promised. She became pregnant and she gave birth to a son for Abraham in his old age. This happened at just the time that God said that it would in that year. Abraham named their son Isaac. 8 days after Isaac was born, Abraham was circumcised. Abraham circumcised him as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. Sarah declared, God has brought me laughter. All who hear about this will laugh with me. Who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse a baby? Yet I have given Abraham a son in his old age. 4 or 5 years from now, the angel comes to Hope Richardson. Hope, you're going to have a baby. We all laugh about that. And the ironic twist of the story is, of course, Isaac's name means laughter. There's this irony to the story where Sarah is kind of chastised for her laughter at the beginning of the story. Because she's laughing at God. She's laughing at the absurdity. Laughing at the impossibility. And then somewhere, through the bend and twist and turns of the story a year later, she embraces that laughter to a point where she says, yeah, every time I see my child or speak his name, I want to be reminded of the laughter of joy that God has brought into. Like laughter serves both purposes in this story. Because both realities relate to us. We know what it's like to doubt. We know what it's like to be given more than we can handle. We know what it's like to look around our church and say, we don't seem to be trending the right way. We don't seem to be growing. God doesn't seem to be sending enough work to us. Whatever it is, we know what that's like. And we know what it's like to look in the mirror and just say, know about this. Not sure about this. And it's about time we start laughing along with God. It's about time acknowledging that God is faithful. He will do what he said he's going to do. He does not promise that it will be easy. He does not promise that you're going to get everything that you want. He does not promise that things are going to go exactly the way that you think they're going to go. He doesn't promise that you won't have struggles. He doesn't promise that you won't have difficulties. He doesn't promise that things won't get really, really hard. He doesn't promise that you won't get to the end of your rope. He doesn't promise that one day you'll wake up in the morning and think, I don't know if I can go on anymore. He doesn't promise that doubt won't overcome you to the point that you're ready to give up. But he does promise that joy will come in the morning. He does promise that living the life that he has laid out for us is a better way to live. He promises that your sacrifice and your faith will be rewarded. He promises that he will be faithful. He promises that he will save us. As we sang before I got up this morning, we stand on those promises. Not naively thinking that it's all going to be bonbons and listening to great music and relaxing and laying back and enjoying life. Abundant country like ours, life can be difficult. Life can be tough. And in a lot of ways, when we get to those moments where we feel overwhelmed, we're just like Sarah, about to be overcome with difficulties of life, kind of giving up on the promises of God. I mean, imagine that as an elderly woman looking back at the prime of your life and the promise that you held on to for so long. And then finally, maybe not angrily, maybe not bitterly, but you just kind of give up. This wasn't meant to be. This wasn't in the cards. And out of nowhere, God comes and says, not now. Be assured. It seems to me that the words of Psalm 30 are the perfect way to end our time this morning. The Psalms are a beautiful collection of songs and hymns and poems that were written, oftentimes reflecting the very things that Sarah was going through, the very things that we go through. I had a professor at college, we were talking about prayer, and somebody said, well, how do we learn how to pray? And he said, why don't you start with the psalm? Just pray the psalm. But I guarantee wherever you're at in your life, there is a psalm for you. There's a psalm for that. There was a psalm for Sarah, even though the psalms came much later. Psalm 30 very much could have been written by Sarah. Perhaps it could be written by you. I will exalt you, Lord, for you have rescued me. You refused to let my enemies triumph over me. O Lord, my God, I cried to you for help, and you restored my health. You brought me up from the grave, O Lord. You kept me from falling into the pit of death. Sing to the Lord, all you godly ones. Praise his holy name, for his anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may last through the night, joy comes. When I was prosperous, I said, nothing can stop me now. Your favor, O Lord, made me as secure as a mountain. When you turned away from me and I was shattered, I cried out to you, O Lord. I begged the Lord for mercy, crying, what will you gain if I die, if I sink into the grave? Can my dust praise you? Can it tell of your faithfulness? Hear me, Lord, and have mercy on me. Help me, O Lord. You have turned my mourning into joyful dancing. You have taken away my clothes of mourning and clothed me with joy, that I might sing praises to you and not be silent. O Lord, my God, I will give you thanks forever. God doesn't promise that we won't have difficulty. He doesn't promise that we won't mourn and struggle and strive. He does acknowledge those difficulties. Turns our mourning. He turns our laughter of accusation and disapproval and disbelief, and he turns it into a laughter of joy and celebration. And it's what we come here to remind you. And so as we end our time together this morning, let us sing about God turning our mourning into dancing. Let's stand and sing the song together.